With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, we are live. Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On today's show, I have a very special guest, a returning guest. His name is Joseph E. Green, and he's just published a book. It came out 2 weeks ago. And if you're watching this on YouTube or Rockfin, you can see the title. The title is Tinfoil Hat, Not Included, Conspiracy Theories in Art and Practice. And it goes into a lot of very... current topics. People talk about conspiracy. What isn't conspiracy? What's the state? How we look at the world, really, with this new information, so much information floating around. So I really enjoyed reading through this book. And I've had Joe on in the past. We talked about his other two-part book, and that was Dissenting Views 1 and 2. That's also Investigations in History, Culture, Cinema, and Conspiracy. And his website is his full name with JFK at the end. So it's joegreenjfk.com. I'll put that in the show notes. And you also can see he's working on a publishing house, which is Say Something Real Press. So I'll also put that in the show notes. But it's a really interesting book. A lot of names pop up. A lot of people. Somebody who one of his friends is Mr. McBride, who I interviewed a couple times. But really interesting topics, and I'm delighted to have him back. So Joseph E. Green, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate the introduction.
Great. Awesome. So for people who may not have heard of our earlier show, can you kind of do an overview of kind of your background and research and what led you to kind of write your books? I know you're involved in a lot of other stuff and a documentary as well, but then what kind of led up to Tinfoil Hat Not Included?
Yeah. So I started out with the Coalition on Political Assassinations, which is run by a guy named John Judge, who I met about 15 years ago now, or more, no, 16, 17. Anyway, it's been a while. And he basically became a mentor for me. I was interested in a lot of these things in a kind of abstract or academic way. And John sort of pointed me into the nitty gritty of the details of how the world actually works. And it turns out that every time you turn over a rock, there's a conspiracy under it. And unfortunately, you look at one and then you look at the next one and you think this can't possibly be also. And yeah, it turns out that one was too. And you just keep going. It's incredible the way things come into each other and how almost nothing you see on television is true in any sense.
No, it is amazing. Like, we're in a kind of a new kind of informational era where the cover story is total deception. It's also superficial. There's a lot more to the story that oftentimes the public discourse is leaving out critical elements of who these people really are, what they really did, what's been left out of history. So it's kind of like, and it's kind of like, for me, when I was reading through your book, it's like conspiracy. It is a conspiracy, but it's like, it's how you perceive these things, how we think what we think. You wrote that in the introduction. So it's like, what are the terminologies that we use?
Well, and then terminology, of course, came to us by popular demand of the CIA after the Kennedy assassination, the term conspiracy theorist. And it's a really troubling pairing of words. Like, basically, what it actually means, if you break out the syntax, is one thing, but what people understand by it, what is denoted by the term conspiracy theorist, tends to be like you're a whack job who, you know, thinks something wild or untrue. The Kennedy assassination becomes a kind of a people don't jump to that necessarily. I think people nowadays tend to jump to, you don't believe the earth is round, or you believe everybody's a lizard, or something truly, outrage that would require an enormous amount of evidence that appears to be unavailable to try and prove. Whereas the area that I spend most of my time in, and most researchers spend most of their time in, are areas where there is available evidence, but that evidence is not presented in the media, so people accept whatever story that they're given. And unfortunately, this happens over and over again. And I'm not much of a Noam Chomsky guy, but in this book, I do give him his proper credit for making the statement that the more free your country is, or the more you have some sort of democratic election thing going in your country, the more you need to be propagandized, right? If the state just has an iron fist and will just kill you or imprison you for doing anything, you don't really need a whole lot of propaganda. The propaganda is in deference to the fact that we have so much freedom and ability to look into these things. So, and unfortunately, that's what comes to bite, and that's where this book came out of.
Is just all that propaganda that's coming out. Like, our history almost is propaganda in a lot of ways. If not all, I mean,
it is.
I don't know where.
Yeah. The trouble with a lot of these terms, and this is what I was trying to reset in this book, is that it's almost like it always means too much or too little. There's very few nuances in these things. So it's like, well, you're pro conspiracy theory. Well, I'm not pro conspiracy theory, but if the facts lead me in that direction, I won't jump off the trail just because it leads to a conspiracy. That's the critical thing. It's not that you're seeing conspiracies everywhere. It's that there are plenty of conspiracies. And the hilarious thing about in our country is that some of them are actually acknowledged. Some of them aren't, but they still remain in the public consciousness. And one of my favorite examples, which I also cited in this book, which is now, it happened something almost 20 years ago. But Colin Powell was asked about the overthrow of Salvador Allende's government. And he was just answering questions off the cuff. And they said, do you regret our involvement in that? And Colin Powell says, yeah, I do regret that. And the United States regrets that. And, we shouldn't have been involved in that thing. Well, he got into big trouble because the United States had not officially said that, yes, we did do Salvador Allende. And since they hadn't admitted to it yet, it was naughty thing to say in front of the press. But again, it's because Colin Powell's an intelligent person. He knows what the hell's going on. And he answered the question honestly.
Right. So it's like you have to keep these public myths, right? This public myth.
Shibboleths.
Yes, right. So you have to really do it. That Allende was the original 9/11, September 11th, I think.
The original 9/11. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, shock doctrine, really awful stuff. But yeah, so it's like and it still goes on today, right? I mean, we still have questions JFK.
It's more brazen, I guess, in some sense. Like it used to be, like even when they were writing things like the Critics and Scoundrels, there was an article that was written in the 60s about the quote unquote scoundrels that are criticizing the Warren Commission. But even then, there was much more of a tendency to take on issues of substance rather than just these, like in a modern newspaper, if there's an editorial, it wouldn't say, well, the evidence doesn't support that JFK was assassinated by a conspiracy. It would just say conspiracy theorists are idiots. And they're also anti-vaxxers, and they're also this. And then it just becomes a chain of association. I don't know if you've read any articles like that in any newspaper, but this is how they go. They don't rise to even providing any kind of substantive discourse. It's just, you're dumb because you believe this. And that, unfortunately, the way a lot of people think this.
Right. And so then it kind of twists the public mind. And then also it divides people into two different camps. Like, I think it, your statement about nuance is really important, because even in this discourse, you're either a schizo conspiracist or a normie, right? You can't kind mm-hmm. of be in some middle place where you're asking questions or, you know, questioning history or trying to look for discourse, like you said. So it is interesting how that kind of rhetoric is so powerful yeah. in our communication and discourse.
Well, and it's funny too, because even just on television, if you go back to the 60s and you watch like William Buckley's program, speaking of scoundrels, like William Buckley is a detestable human being who I'm completely on the other side of the fence politically, but he was articulate and he could make a defense of a position, and there was a certain amount of intellectual heft that was brought to bear. Nothing like that remotely is on television. If you've ever seen like James Baldwin give an interview, as he did a few times, and they're totally amazing off the cuff interviews. There's nothing like that on television today. Like, there's not remotely. It's all this kind of, you know, Trump versus screaming leftists, and it never gets anywhere in between there. And now you've got like, DeSantis is going to be the new Trump, you know, so he's going to be like further to the right of Trump somehow. Anyway, so you can see the theater playing out as we right. see.
Yeah. And so the people aren't looking. I mean, and that's also another theme in your book, is what's behind the curtain of the theater, right? So you talk about Baum, Oz, and things like that. But I think like Buckley came out as God and Man at Yale, I think was the title of his book. So he came out as a Christian, but the guy was in Skull and Bones, which means that he was initiated. And I mean, we can go into the graphic details of what that initiation is, but like, he's playing two fields. Also, like, I don't know, some people, yeah, he was, he preferred dudes. So he was out there kind of like as like the Christian intellectual, but his private life was just like the opposite, man. Like, really?
Yeah, although there's kind of a tradition of that now, of that very thing. And, you know, I'm not going to do any armchair psychologizing in that regard. But the fact of the matter is that Buckley, if he was on television now, I think people just wouldn't understand what he was saying. And this is somebody who's like severely right wing, and presumably would be on the side of, well, who knows? Republican Party is... both parties really have moved in very bad directions for us, which is another thing that's also very difficult to discuss, because you end up getting into these wild binaries that have nothing to do with each other and nothing to do, frankly, with reality.
Right, right. And that's the whole thing. And so people are taking this kind of theatrics and rhetoric that get clicks or get attention and considering that to be their reality too, which is all, you know, kind of scary. Like, you clearly can see that these people on TV are saying the most outrageous thing just to get people angry and get attention, and even online, right? But it's it's to elicit a response, not to actually have accurate discourse about everything involved in our reality.
Yeah, and there's always a part of culture that is like that. I mean, there were shock jocks going back to the 70s, right? And that just grew and grew and grew, and they got on television with Morton Downey, and, you know, it dug further tunnels, but it continued to exist in the culture, and it got bigger and bigger in the culture. And so now, like, shock jocks are basically what we have as a political system, is just, you know, two people saying wildly different things, but, you know, not only there's no common ground, there's no discourse, there's no language to even speak what a reconciliation would be. Like,
it's so true. I mean, like, Trump is he's one of the biggest purveyors of that, like, clearly saying stuff to get attention and getting in the public eye like a shock jock. He's almost like a shock jock politician. Even his most recent thing about Ron DeSanctimonious and all this stuff. Like, he's playing for people like Morton Downey. What was the original guy? There was this other lunatic on late night TV before Downey. I wish I could remember his name.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
I know you. Yes, I know who you're thinking of. I cannot think of who that is.
Right now, his daughter was that one actress. Gosh, what is his name? But I'll have to look it up. But they were just doing it for fun. And they had the audience all ramped up. And, I mean, come out with a flag.
Yeah, well, it's not, I mean, and it's been said before, but it's, you know, it's a little like wrestling. And it's gotten more and more like wrestling because there's so little talk about things that actually matter to most people's lives. You know, it becomes these abstract.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
No, you know, immigration. I'm against immigration. Like, what the hell does that even mean? I'm against immigration, like, as a concept. Like, you don't ever want to, you know. And then the same thing, I'm pro-immigration. So, okay, so what? And then when you see it on TV, it's inevitably presented exactly like that. The people who are anti-immigration are anti-immigration, the hell with everyone. And the people who are pro-immigration want everybody in the whole world, which, you know, in a conservative or an older person's mind means, you know, guns, thieves, you know, robbers, whatever. Because they're all talking about these abstract images that, again, are simplified and barely represent anything. I mean, some of this is, you know, and one of the things I was trying to do in this book is because I find myself being at odds all the time with the culture, which is very wearying. Like at a certain point, I just like, ah. But I wanted to try and articulate that in a simple and shorter way than I have before, because I think that both of my Dissenting Views books are a little bit too academic at times. And so I was trying to bring this to a scenario where it's hopefully shorter, but hopefully it packs a punch.
And it is interesting. You're willing to go to both sides because you criticize NPR, Scott Simon's reporting. So some, you know, you're not, you know, willing. I mean, I try to do the same thing as criticize everybody too. But can you talk kind of about maybe your introductory chapter about Scott Simon and NPR and how some of these guys really are servants of the state? I mean, they get paid by the state, so it's not surprising that they become on the left. They become servants of the state. And Wally George is his name. Thanks, Dappy Jack. Yeah, Wally George.
Wally George. There you go. It's not, and it doesn't matter that much. Like when you're saying left and right, it's usually things that the left and the right in this country get polarized about, you know, say like abortion or something like that, have nothing to do with sort of maintaining a general a desire for big business to operate within its confines, right? So the left and the right agree on this huge thing that basically we want to be good for business in general when we're making our decisions. And if you're on the left, you say, well, you also have to consider a couple of other things, but basically we're on board. And if you're right, the argument is, well, we don't consider anybody. We just consider, you know, these are how fine these distinctions are, right? And then you also have this notion that we're also going to be a technological state. And that's a good thing. And it's always been said this. It's been like, you know, and when you go to a political speech, inevitably they get around to saying, we're going to improve our technology and that's going to be good for us. And what that actually means tends to be good for business, which is not necessarily good for you or me or, you know, somebody at home. What you're referring to was about Scott Simon, is that Scott Simon had a show in 1981 at the same time. It was Weekend Edition on National Public Radio, so everybody's probably familiar with this. And on March 30, 1981, Ronald Reagan was shot. And the accused assassin, attempted assassin, was John Hinckley Jr., right? And he was described as a deranged drifter, but then it turned out that he was not a deranged drifter, or he may well be deranged, but he was the scion of a very rich oil family that knew the Bushes very well. And so the, this has been called now, the area where Ronald Reagan got shot is called the Bushy Knoll. John Judge is the one who crowned it. So, but anyway, so the Hinckleys have been long-term. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that part of what that hotel in Washington, D.C., where he was shot, they made sure to strip it all away. So the whole place where Hinckley supposedly was and that wall, they changed the whole thing so that there would be no memory of even the landscape or the architecture at that time. Because when I was in D.C., I was like, this doesn't look anything like this.
I had the same years later. Oh, wow. So that was, I was going to say, I just went there 6 or 7 years ago and just to be in the area, because you're right, it doesn't look, you try to match it up with pictures and it's useless.
Yeah, I was there in 95, right? So it was 15 years later, totally different. Wow. The total.
Well, anyway, so this Hinckley Bush shooting, Scott Simon had the chance to ask Bush about the Hinckley Bush connection, and he didn't do it. And when he was then asked why he didn't do it, he said that may be something that gentlemen just don't ask gentlemen. And I write in here that I don't like that. Okay.
And it wasn't what the Bush son was supposed to have a dinner with the Hinckley family, like on the Scott same Hinckley. Night or the night before,
It was actually going to be the night after, if I recall correctly. But it's not even the dinner, because it's just the fact that, you know, this person who turns out to be the assassin or the attempted shooter of Ronald Reagan has this long family connection with the Bushes, like really pretty deep. Like they knew the family, they grew up together, you know. And you're just not allowed to ask the question. It's a bizarre disconnect that the bigger the crime, the more improper it is to ask about the motives for that crime.
Right. And there's a lot of suspicious things around that shooting, right? Hinckley was involved in World Vision. You mentioned that, just like Chapman with the Lenin death.
Yep, he was in World Vision, which is a CIA front. There's all kinds of stuff. We could do a whole show on that.
But I think the shooting happened. It was March 81, right? So Reagan had just started his presidency. So if he died, Bush would have been president and been president for the next 4 years running the country, even though he's extensively ran the country anyway.
Yeah, John Judge always said this, and I agree that he considers that Bush year one. Because after Reagan is essentially a guy who waves and takes naps. And Bush is running the show, according to that theory. Reagan was, you probably know that Reagan and Bush, like, really, Bush was generally disliked in Republican circles. And particularly so, Bush hated Reagan. Reagan was, you know, he had certainly his flaws, but he was basically, he was polite about wanting everybody to participate. So when they were going to have a debate.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Bush wanted a debate with Reagan only, and Reagan said, no, let's invite everybody, including the libertarian, you may remember, I think it was his name John Anderson. He used to run for president
every single
4 years from the Libertarian Party. And he's like, yeah, sure, let's get him. You know, so that's a, you know, give Reagan points for that. And Bush was not interested in that at all. And they'd been combative the whole time. And so it's not totally out of the woodwork to ask whether this was suspicious in any way. And it was essentially dismissed on day one. And those are the stories that are, it's like a big giant red flag. There's a very obvious question that is not being asked. And then at some point we're told that it's improper to ask that question. It is an improper question. I'm just not a believer in improper questions. I don't think there are improper questions.
I agree. I think a lot of these people, it's still in journalism today on both sides. If you want access to these politicians or invited to their after hour parties, you cannot ask certain questions or you're done. You're off of that list, baby. You're gone.
Right.
So
you can't do your work.
Can't feed your family. Your career. Can't pay your kids. Yeah. Can't pay your kids college. You're done. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, and it's something that happens on all over all journalists. So there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
You talk about QAnon too in this book. You talk about kind of conspiracy theories, like really going into kind of Michael Shermer's like a known kind of skeptic on everything, right? So he's skeptical about this whole conspiracy culture or whatever.
Well, but I mean, it's a disingenuous argument because he's not like he's sitting down and actually analyzing, you know, the culture and then coming up with an answer. He's got a predetermined answer and then he just cites essentially nothing, but he talks for a while and that's supposed to be a support for his position. Unlike, by the way, again, going back to the 60s, right? Richard Hofstadter wrote a famous book that was about American conspiracies. And although he was, you know, on the other side of this issue, it was a reasonable and fairly well-researched book. So it was possible, even in that book came out in 1964, right after Kennedy was killed. There was some ability to bring certain questions out at that time that really doesn't happen now.
Right. What was the, do you know the title of Hofstadter? It's H-O-F.
Oh yeah. It's it's a famous, oh God, it just popped out of my head.
I'll find it. Let's see. Paranoid Style in American Politics.
American Politics. Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's the one. I can't believe it. It just dropped out of my head.
But those, I mean, these kind of paranoid style is always around. I mean, total paranoia, what did Mitt say? Total paranoia is total awareness. And you talk about like some other people in this about why maybe some of this paranoia is justified considering the state, all the president's men, Pakula, who also did, what is it? Not Scanner Darkly. It's Parallax View. Yeah, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No,
it is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Yeah, I love the 70s paranoid thrillers where you could sort of make really good films on adult themes and that were inspired by stuff that was going on in the counterculture of the 60s, which is where my heart really lies. But I feel like this discussion isn't happening very often. And that's what I was trying to do with this thing. Get some of these questions out there. At least hopefully if somebody reads it, maybe gain an ability to parse some of the language of how discussions happen in this country and why they're polarized and why they need not be in some cases. But also to get out of the training of always regarding the state's position as the default position and one that shouldn't be questioned. Because unfortunately, I mean, I hate to tell you, and it always, if you just say it to a person, you tend to sound nuts, but it's like the Kennedy assassination is a conspiracy. Martin Luther King was assassinated by conspiracy. Malcolm X, you know, and away we go. And I can't help that.
RFK, yeah.
And Ted Kennedy. Yeah, I wrote a whole thing on Ted Kennedy, which and most people are on the other side of that. But there's been some interesting work that came out from there. But the point being is that just sounds like a bunch of nonsense. Most people are not going to be able to accept that just bluntly. But I feel like if you go one at a time and you get the proper training to understand when somebody is trying to lie to you, what are they likely to say in this propaganda culture? And that's what I'm trying to do with Tinfoil Hat. I mean, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek title. But again, the whole idea is to try and take an ice pick to some of the language that's being used in this country. Because
but it's just like the narrowing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is Orwellian, right? Because you narrow the language down to these very blocky forms. And then when people are discourse, they're not getting any deeper understanding, particularly when the American state has been involved in so many dark events since the end of World War II. And you start off with this crazy guy who said America had the coons or whatever. But like we've been involved in some pretty heavy duty stuff. And so, you know. We dropped news on Japan. Like we're capable of like really horrible stuff,
which is hardly ever addressed. In you know, if you do any research into that and just have a certain amount of empathy, I've having looked into that, I think that you know, if somebody were born Japanese and they wanted to dedicate themselves to destroying the United States, like I would understand. You know what I mean? Based on the fact that we dropped those bombs, because those stories are horrific. If you go into that stuff, which I won't right now, but yeah. And then when you can pick up some of that, when you learn the real history of even something like World War II, you can at least train yourself to empathize a little bit with the people who are getting crushed. I mean, the whole thing about terrorism is that it's from unequal parties, right? The guerrilla band, they're terrorists because they're operating against the state. If the state carpet bombs them, that's not considered terrorism in our language.
Right, or poisons them with Agent Orange, causing
or poisons them immense
harm Orange, for, yes. For generations. Like what the Americans
after we invaded their country.
Right. on a fake pretext, right? We know the Gulf
on a fake, yes.
Was engineered. So like you're going, if you're really thinking, are you really a conspiracy or are you just trying, like how do these terms overlap where you're a conspiracy investigator or are you just looking at the true history, not this kind of whitewashed, superficial kind of like white bread view of history when it's much more nuanced and there's a lot of other things going on influencing history. So
yeah, and it's precisely why that history isn't taught that way. I mean, everyone remembers that when they were in high school or even university, if you were in like a general course, history is the most boring subject imaginable. But it's not actually. Like history is fascinating. It's a continuing drama with all these different human personalities and amazing things happening. But standard history as it's taught in a school is just stultifying. It's horrible. You know, why is that?
Which is another part of it's another part of the grand conspiracy is that you just get this terrible thing. Like how, when you think like it's epistemology, when you get this horrible impression of history, then you don't even want to know the truth because it's so boring. They've taken all the interest out of it. And I would actually argue that all history, at least of nations and even in individual countries, is conspiratorial. All politics, even in the U.S., it's all not like on a legal standard conspiracy, but the fact that people are always trying to knife each other in the back and front stab people for political power is just, it's human history. Goes all the way back to Cain and Abel. So
yeah, I've said it this way before. How many heads of the Federal Reserve are there? You know, like a dozen. Okay, are you invited to their meetings? Do you know what they talked about? So how much influence does the Federal Reserve have over the United States, right? And you could do that with anything. I mean, basically, if you work in a company and your company has a CEO that's on the 32nd floor, how much input do you actually have as to what's going on? Virtually none. It's decided by one guy and maybe eight people in his, and they make all the decisions for the company. If the United States is just a large company, which essentially it is, as I've said, it's both parties are agreed that we need to make conditions smooth for business, then yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Conspiracy is just doing business.
There, go talk with a major corporation. It's all conspiratorial thinking, how you can get your competitor, stealth mode, rollouts, getting corporate information. I mean, it's subterfuge. Yeah. It's like these corporations aren't the CIA, but they want to be like the CIA.
They've
been conditioned through language and through the political party, people in power, the state in a very broad sense to not really analyze and think. And so that the people who are not wanting you to think then besmirch and belittle you. And then the people who are still under this Wizard of Oz kind of mind rape then are against you and put you into a strange place because they haven't done the kind of step-by-step thinking to look beyond or underneath the curtain or past the curtain.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Right. Do you agree with that?
Not at all. And completely. And you also have to look at the history of standardized education in the United States, like who started it and who wanted it. And it's big business wanted it, like literally, the Rockefellers, Carnegie, and the imposition of school in the United States, where you go to a building that's supervised by a teacher, and you know that every 45 minutes or so the bell rings, and you move to this other room, and you do this other thing, and that lasts 45, like that schooling. The history of that is actually really interesting. There's a great book by a guy named John Taylor Gatto. It's called The Underground History of American Education. And it talks about how when they were putting those things in, that they were based on Prussian ideals. And they had specifically looked at Pavlov's work, which is why they use bells to get people to moving. It's fascinating. So a thing that we grow to completely accept, you never think about, you know, why does my child need to go to public school or whatever? It's not even a question, right? But like 200 years ago, no one did this. So it is pretty interesting. You know, this is a pretty, and I'm not saying that school is bad or anything like it. I'm just saying that learning the history of how we got these things influences the way you think about them after that.
Yeah, no doubt. Really does. The that's a whole nother topic, but it fits into the tinfoil hat kind of thing. Like I talked to John Klyzek, who wrote a book about this learning, and it's like Skull and Bones is involved in it. All kinds of sinister people.
Yeah.
What was the lady's name whose uncle was in, or dad was in Skull and Bones? It was, can't remember that name. Damn it. But yeah, I think she was friends with Gatto, if I remember correctly, but okay. Yeah, it's just, I mean, I never questioned my education. I have a lot of questions after going through the system for all those years. Like, yeah, what did I really learn? Mm-hmm. I actually had to relearn kind of history in a lot of ways. I mean, it's really kind of a strange thing, but I'm still relearning actually in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you always are. And there's always going to be new stuff coming out and new ways of looking at history too, which is a big tension, obviously, in our country with Civil War statues getting taken down, I think quite rightly, but that's another thing. So that is starting to surface a little bit, which is also good, although it tends to be played as a complete hard binary, like everything else the media promulgates. So you never get any nuance in those discussions either. But it is good that at least different views are being considered.
Right. I mean, why couldn't they just take the statues and put them in a museum? That's what I don't get. Like, you can take them down, just move them somewhere.
I think that would make sense.
Statue of somebody else. I don't care. Like, you need to know that history. You can't. What's a huge mistake of anybody to actually whitewash history? It's nasty. It's ugly.
Right.
Slavery, wars. People are nasty to each other. They poison each other. There's all kinds of things people have to learn from that.
Mm-hmm. All the time. I've written about that. I wrote about Shakespeare's politics because that's the other thing that I think is funny and slightly ironic is that the greatest writer of all time in the English language generally is agreed upon to be William Shakespeare, whose history plays are full of conspiracies. The plots of all of them are about people trying to kill the king because they want to get power. You know, Macbeth and Lady Macbeth, right? And right. You know, Hamlet.
It's Julius Caesar.
Julius Caesar, the granddaddy. So, I mean, if you read those plots, you know, plots have I laid, inductions dangerous, right? It's Richard III. They're all about conspiracies. And I think that's another thing that's buried because it's a thing that we understand, I think, intuitively, like Colin Powell understands that, yes, we were involved in kidnapping Salvador Allende. But since you're not able to acknowledge it to the public, you've got this doublethink thing going on all the time.
Yeah, that's true. Joe, we're at the 40-minute mark. Do you have time to take a few questions?
Yeah, if there's questions, I can take some questions.
Mike asks, does the book cover artist Mark Lombardi? It seems like it overlaps. Do you know who Mark Lombardi was?
Yeah, actually, there's a Facebook group on Mark Lombardi that I started like 16 years ago or something, like it was a long time ago. I don't know if I specifically cite Mark in this book. I have written about Lombardi stuff in other books and in other articles and things. Mark Lombardi's his art is amazing. It's I wish everybody could see it. But
I did a full show on him. Did a full show on Mark so people can check it out. It's like Mark Lombardi and A Conspiracy So Immense is the title. I'll stick it in the show notes. You can check out because there was a really good documentary about him that captured him and his art. And I include little snippets of that in my presentation. But
nice.
Unfortunately, passed away.
There was really a pretty good book written, which I think I have in here somewhere. But it's a
from that lady. I asked her to come. She told me to pound sand. She said, "Are you the William Ramsey on KWXY TV?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Later." So I tried to talk to her. That's why I had to do my own show about him because I thought it was important. Yeah. But no, there's a book out there. I forgot the name of it. It has his circles on diagrams on the cover. Exactly. All right. Mike asks again, is it true that Lee Harvey Oswald's housekeeper was hired by Alan Dulles and that the poisoning of FDR is also linked to Dulles?
I've seen those claims. Just like you, I don't know about that. The poisoning of FDR, there was a book.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Call, was it the one that was, they killed Roosevelt? It's an early book. There's been suggestions of that FDR was poisoned, and also that Hoover was poisoned. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
I heard that Wilson was poisoned. Like, he died very suspiciously too.
Well, he also had, but he had a stroke, and he was like half of his face was paralyzed. So I'm not sure about that, because I think he was sick for quite a while. He may have died suddenly, but he had physical issues. I was going to write
been sick. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I had written half a play about Wilson, so I looked into that a little bit.
Interesting. He kind of regretted after. I think at the end he. D.R. Piper, wasn't Garfield poisoned as well? I don't know.
Yeah, really getting poisoned is a pretty, like, what's weird. I mean, besides the poisoning, of course, is that like one of our presidents gets shot at and or killed about every 40 years or so, I think, if you do the math. Just pretty unnerving for a country that's supposed to be, you know, top of the world. That's always been peculiar about our country, that we do tend to have a lot of dead presidents that way. There is one that the official, I don't think it was Garfield. It was, there is a president that died of eating cherries and milk officially.
Oh, yeah.
But apparently there's some people who argue that it was actually arsenic poisoning, which in any case is more believable than dying of cherries and milk.
True. But there's also presidents who've been shot and survived, like Jackson, a gun misfired. Right. Roosevelt was shot and gave a speech. You know, so
Teddy's famous speech.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, but I mean, so but that's lunacy. Like, there are most countries do not like have this level of violence against their leaders every couple of generations. Like, it's pretty unusual. Particularly, like I say, if all the PR is about land of the free, home of the brave, and all that kind of stuff, but you know, if you're a president, you might get shot. There's a bizarre contrast there for sure. How violent our politics is.
America's a violent country. They had a guy come out, I forgot his name, but he said, yeah, America's a very violent country involved in all these wars, and people went after him. Forgot it was an American professor. Do you know that story? It's very recent.
I don't think I've heard that.
Find the guy's name.
I've talked about this elsewhere, and I talk about it a little bit in the book about the fact that I do think that there's a continuity with Great Britain to the United States, that after World War II, there's a reason why the United States becomes the kind of main player in the Western world, the way that the Great Britain used to be and could no longer be after the Blitz, because, you know, they were going to be scrambling to survive for quite a while. But I think that there is that.
The U.S. was in a strange position after World War II, because if they didn't have that kind of overt drive, at least up until 1945, for this. I mean, they had a sea to shining sea mentality, but they didn't come to that whole world dominance like the Germans really wanted. And then World War II happened, and it's like, who's left standing? This one giant country with a huge population and huge
and
war,
that had, you know, not untouched been damaged. By war. Yeah, right. They had not been damaged in the war. And in fact, they just had the most productive years in their history, because that was the incredible thing about World War II, is that we completely got the nation onto war footing, you know, virtually overnight. Maybe not a positive, but it's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, our history really is incredible. The U.S. history this most generation, just tons of conspiracies, tons of conspiratorial stuff. Mark Lombardi is a perfect example.
Yeah. Well, and there's weird stuff too. Like, hey, I also mentioned that one president was almost shot by a Japanese. You know, Jimmy Carter, there was an assassination attempt on Jimmy Carter that most people are not aware of. But then it turned out that the guy's name was Osvaldo, and the other guy's name was Harvey. Like, these two guys Harvey like and it's Oswald a message. Are going to kill Jimmy Carter. Yeah, like, I mean, is it sending a message to somebody? I mean, maybe. You know?
I would think it's a message. I think Ford, like, narrowly escaped a bullet, too, if I remember correctly.
Twice.
Like some
one of them from one of Charlie Manson's girls.
Yeah, Squeaky Fromm.
Squeaky Fromm and Sarah Jane Moore, and they both had these very bizarre... in one case, I don't remember if it was Sarah Jane Moore or not. The gun didn't have any bullets or something, if I remember right. But yeah, they, two right. very like, bizarre.
But there was a bullet, right? So there's
oh yeah, 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 yeah.
That's Roar, so, but she didn't have any bullets in her gun. So what the heck's going on? Oh.
Yeah,
that's, I've seen this script before.
Yes, that pops up all the time. Yeah,
yeah. The real history of America is really crazy. Yeah. I mean, even the recent history. Yeah, there's some. Interesting stuff.
It didn't start on January 6th.
No doubt. There's no doubt. Joseph, we are at the 50-minute mark. Is there anything you'd like to add or anything I missed before we wrapped up? There's a lot more in this book. You did a really great job. Just one more thing. In the kind of latter ones, I really enjoyed the chapter on All the President's Men, William Goldman, Pakula. So there's some really good, great like film analysis in this book. So people should check that out, too.
We can talk about that another time.
I got to wrap.
It's a big topic. Yeah. But no, Joe Green JFK is the best place to find the book. Tinfoil Hat not included. And I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come on.
My pleasure. And so it's, can people get a signed copy from you at Joe Green JFK?
Not yet. I'm testing that because the publishing is in a little bit of a thing right now because of COVID, and there I want to see how fast I can get the books delivered to me because I'm still waiting on my initial shipment, so I'm a little concerned about that. So I'll make an announcement if I can.
Okay, but people can be updated at your website, Joe.
Oh yeah, JFK. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I always put
you can find your other work. Yeah, other work. Yeah. There's other you've written a ton of articles, tons of other stuff, and
all over the place.
Yeah, so congratulations on the new book. Again, the full title, you can find it on Amazon, is Tinfoil Hat Not Included, Conspiracy Theories in Art and Practice, published 2022. It's been out for 2 weeks, and today is November the 11th, 2022. So, Joe,
yes, sir.
Thank you so much for your time.
Hey, thanks, William. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Stay there. Stay there.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.